Dr. Craig, you had the opportunity to contribute to an article in a book called The New Mormon Challenge. And the book is very good in that there are many essays that contrast a Mormon view with a Christian view on a very philosophical level. And you had the opportunity with Paul Copan to contribute an article on creation ex nihilo, or creation out of nothing or from nothing, which Mormon theology tends to have a problem with. They don't hold, apparently, at least the bulk of Mormon theologians, don't hold to creation out of nothing. They teach that God had pre-existing material from which he crafted the universe.
Yes.
And so he had some things to work with. Now, there seems from the get-go to be some problems there. Would that say that there is some kind of matter or stuff that is co-eternal with God?
Well, yes, and in fact, on a Mormon view, God is a material object. This is one of the strange things about Mormonism that I think most people don't realize. In fact, probably, I suspect many Mormons don't even realize what Joseph Smith and the Mormon Church has traditionally taught. Mormonism is one of the strangest cults ever to arise out of American soil. Joseph Smith believed that God is a material humanoid being who lives on a planet in outer space, who is the product of physical intercourse from his parents, and who will in turn beget children of his own, and that this regresses infinitely into the past.
In other words, there was a God before him and a God before him and a God before him, and then we've got the problem with an infinite regress.
Yes, exactly. So it wasn't long after I had published the Kalam Cosmological Argument that some people who were involved in ministries to Mormons came to me and said, this argument is absolutely devastating if it goes through to Mormon theology, because it is inherent in Mormon doctrine that not only did the world not have a beginning, as you say, the material universe has always existed, but that God is part of the material universe. God himself is a physical object which has been begotten by other physical gods before him. So Mormonism is a form of polytheism of the crassest sort, namely that there are material, physical, humanoid gods and goddesses that are responsible for the creation of worlds and who are the gods over these different worlds and universes.
Wow. Have you had any Mormon scholars or theologians interact with you on the Kalam? Have they written you or anything?
A little bit. One of the things that I got to know or understand about Mormonism is that Mormon theology is not very highly developed and sophisticated in the way that Christian theology is. Mormonism doesn't have a sort of creedal statement, and so it's very fluid. And indeed, in this book, The New Mormon Challenge, one of the offers that we hold out to Mormons is that given the fluidity of their doctrine, why can't they go ahead and embrace orthodox views of God and orthodox views of Christ and the Trinity? And so there aren't very many Mormon scholars, per se, Mormon philosophers, Mormon theologians with whom one can interact. But what Carl Mosser and Frank Beckwith, who edited this book, wanted us to do is to not offer the sort of superficial, dismissive refutations of Mormonism that you often find in counter-cult books. They said, we want you to read the best of Mormon scholarship on this topic and to interact with it in a substantive, charitable, and responsible way. And so you'll find in the article that Paul and I did on creation out of nothing that I interact with some Mormon astronomers and cosmologists who have thought about this question of the beginning of the universe. Mormon theologians and philosophers are really as scarce as hen's teeth, and they don't tend to talk about these subjects. But there are a few Mormon astronomers and scientists who have touched on this. And so I do interact with their views in this article. There's also a Mormon lawyer. His name is Blake Ostler, and he has responded to the cosmological argument. Now, he's just an attorney, but he is a sort of self appointed Mormon apologist, and he has interacted with the Kalam argument and tried to refute it as well. So it has occasioned some reaction from the Mormon side of the equation.
Being that Mormon theology is so underdeveloped and fluid and all over the place, the best you can do is just try to point to influential or important Mormons, spokespeople and scholars and founders and so on. You quote in this article B.H. Roberts.
Yes.
Well, he's an important LDS theologian. He was also a member of the First Council of the 70, and he declared that creation ex nihilo, creation out of nothing, is that creation ex nihilo assumes that God is transcendent of the universe. And he doesn't believe that.
No, he doesn't. God is an immanent object in the universe. It's quite astonishing. I mean, really, Kevin, this is like Roman and Greek polytheism in many ways. And, of course, this view is very difficult to reconcile with modern cosmology because the universe is expanding, which means that sometime in the past it was contracted down to a super dense, hot state. Well, what happened to all of these deities if you go back in time and contract down? Did they all get squished down to nothingness? Or are they like ball bearings in a loaf of bread that are just sort of stuck in there? It's very,
well,
very strange.
If you held that they were spiritual beings, there wouldn't be any problem
right.
with that. But they don't hold that. They hold that they are, in fact, material, and so they would be subject to physical law.
Yes, that's right. And all of the problems of thermodynamics and the expansion of the universe would affect these beings. Now, what's interesting about Mormon theology is that given its fluidity, a number of Mormons have been coming over to a more orthodox view of God and starting to enunciate views of God as being a transcendent being beyond the universe. And this is a trend that the editors of this book and as well as ourselves really want to welcome and to encourage. I understand that a lot of Mormon theologians at BYU and elsewhere are very deeply appreciative of C.S. Lewis, for example, and are deeply influenced by Lewis's view of God. So there is some real hope here that just as the Church of God, the Garner Ted Armstrong cult, eventually embraced Trinitarian doctrine and became Orthodox, that the hope would be that perhaps the LDS Church could abandon its heretical aberrations and become Orthodox.
Wouldn't that be great?
It would be absolutely revolutionary if this were to happen, because this is a very, very large church.
We see glimmers of it every once in a while.
Mm-hmm.
But if that were to happen, boy, you sure would have to get rid of a lot of things that Joseph Smith said and taught and Brigham Young taught.
Well, yes, and we talk about this a little bit in the chapter that Paul and I wrote. We try to make it easy as possible for the Mormon theologian to distance himself from these early authors. And there are ways to finesse this by saying that these early authors maybe really didn't mean what they appeared to say, you know, and you can try to kind of nuance their views in such a way as to allow the contemporary Mormon to adopt an orthodox view without having to sort of renounce all of his Mormon heritage and so forth. So the hope would be that members of the LDS Church would be able to embrace Trinitarian orthodox doctrine of God as a transcendent being, creator of time and space, and even though they might still call themselves Mormon or LDS, nevertheless, the church would change and would adopt new doctrine. And as I say, they have no doctrinal confession or statement, so this isn't impossible.
And it would be a trickle-down effect, wouldn't it, with the Mormon leadership were to embrace more orthodox views, the hope would be that then the congregation would follow.
That would be the easiest way. It's because then the leadership would spearhead the movement. I think it's highly unlikely that the prophet, the so-called head of the church, will do this. But I think it's not impossible that, for example, theologians at BYU could begin to teach and enunciate more orthodox views of God.
I have seen glimmers of that in my own reading, mm-hmm. that there are some BYU professors that last several years have kind of stirred things up a little bit.
Yes.
In their move away from some of the traditional things Mormonism has.
Yes, you may remember that book, How Wide the Divide, that Craig Blomberg was involved in with a Mormon theologian. And when Craig would say, well, Mormons believe this and this, and it's unorthodox, his Mormon respondent would say, well, I don't believe those things. Mm-hmm. That's not my view. And it was very clear that this Mormon theologian felt quite free to disagree with the Mormon tradition and to break free of it and enunciate views that were more orthodox. And so we're challenging Mormons to think in that direction of having a more orthodox and, I think, more plausible and defensible worldview.
I think that you brought up a good point earlier, Bill, and that is most Mormon material educating Christians on Mormons is highly inflammatory, very sensationalistic, and you know, anti-Mormon, what the Mormons would call obnoxious or Mormon bashing. While a lot of it may be true as well, I like the tone of the book in that let's really get to the philosophical and the theological and the biblical issues here and not just talk about you guys and your polygamy, you know, your unfortunate background in that and the unsavory character of Joseph Smith in a lot of ways. We beat them over the head so much with that. Let's get down to some issues.
I think that's right, and it's to Karl Mosser's credit, the editor of this book, that he insisted on this sort of approach where one would take Mormon scholars seriously as scholars and not just engage in Mormon bashing.
At the same time, I think we need to be as aggressive and assertive as we can be in that there are some things that just really need to be straightened out, biblically,
right. You
philosophically.
You can't compromise the truth,
oh, of course
but you
not,
can
yeah.
speak the truth in love.
In that the Mormon Church, the LDS, they have an horrific PR problem, and they know it. And so they're always launching multi-million dollar campaigns to try to shore up the image of Mormons and Mormonism. And they even wanted to get rid of the term Mormon. A lot of the PR campaigns and go toward Latter-day Saints or Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, which sounds a lot more Christian.
Yes. Oh, it does. And this represents a very, very significant change from traditional historic Mormonism. Traditionally, Mormons have emphasized that they are not Christians, that Christianity is what Joseph Smith called the great apostasy, that for centuries, the church has existed in this apostate state of rebellion against God until Joseph Smith came along and reclaimed the original revelation. And so Mormons have traditionally sought to distance themselves from Christianity and say how they are not part of these apostate denominations and churches. But now you'll notice the PR campaign is very different. Now Mormonism is cast as just another Christian denomination, akin to Methodists or Presbyterians or Episcopalians or Baptists. Mormons or members of the LDS are simply another Christian denomination and therefore have a place at the table. So it's a very different self-description and self-understanding that contemporary Mormons have.
My own recent observation is Mormon missionaries trying to downplay or soften what's been thrown at them so much, and that is the view that all of us, Mormons in particular, have an opportunity to become gods ourselves and so on. And what they're saying now, at least in this latest PR campaign that's on websites, major websites all across the country, is no, we believe that we can become like God, more like God. Rather than become God.
Yes, and that can sound very innocuous, doesn't it?
Yeah, because we're supposed to be more like Christ.
Yes.
And God is conformist to the image of Christ and so on. But that's wholly different than becoming gods ourselves and the God that we worship actually starting out as a man and then growing to become like God. But that's what traditional Mormonism has taught.
Yes, that was Joseph Smith's view, is that God, Yahweh or Jehovah, was once a human being and was elevated to the position of being God of this universe, and that someday you and I, if we obey good Mormon teaching and are married in the temple and do all the other necessities, will become God over our own universe, and we will be God of that world, and will be worshipped by the people in that world. So it is a polytheistic view that even involves the apotheosis, or the divinization of human beings into becoming gods.
Many saw it as a really positive move for understanding among Christians and Mormons when Ravi Zacharias was invited to speak there in Salt Lake City. And that got some press. You had two reactions. You had those who write a bunch of anti-Mormon material that said he wasn't strong enough and he should have gone after him after all their polytheism and their heretical views. He should have gotten after him more. And others who said, no, he was very gracious and opened up doors that need to be opened up, perhaps. So I'm for the latter approach, in that there's plenty of publications out there that point out the idiosyncrasies of Mormon theology. Now maybe we need to, get down to some nitty-gritty.
Right. If Ravi had gone into that situation and treated it as though he were speaking in just another Christian church, I think that would have been a mistake. That would have been detrimental, because that would have given the Mormon church the authentication that it so desperately craves. But I don't think Ravi did that. I remember reading his speech, and it was very, I thought, very strong on Orthodox, Trinitarian theology.
Yeah.
And therefore, it was really a talk that was very much in your face, so to speak. Well, I thought that was good that he did that.
There were no signs of compromise.
No, not at all. And he, as you say, gracious but uncompromising in his proclamation of the gospel.
We have plenty of material on creation, ex nihilo, at reasonablefaith.org. But let's, in today's podcast, just kind of talking about that view, why it's important to hold that Orthodox Christian view rather than the view that there was pre-existing material that God used to fashion. Because, again, Mormon theologians are going to say it was in an unordered state, but there did exist material for all eternity.
The doctrine of creation out of nothing underlines in the strongest of terms the difference between creator and creation. And it makes God the source of all reality outside himself. On a dualistic view, where you have God as one supreme entity and you have matter or energy as the other supreme entity, you have a sort of metaphysical pluralism where there is no ultimate single source of reality. You have principles that are co-equal and, in a sense, in contradiction with each other, because God has to subdue matter and shape it into the world that he wants it to be, and it has its own properties and powers to resist what God would do with it. But on creation out of nothing, God speaks the very matter and energy into existence, and he is the pinnacle of all reality, the peak of the pyramid, so to speak, from which all reality comes as his creation. And it exists only by his pleasure and is sustained in being by God only so long as he wills. And so I think the doctrine is very important in differentiating a creator from creature, and thereby from any sort of dualistic view or pantheistic view that would identify God in the world.
Thank you so much for joining us today on Reasonable Faith with Dr. William Lane Craig. And while you're at our website, reasonablefaith.org, several things we want you to check out. Dr. Craig's latest books are available, articles, and be sure that you listen to the Defenders podcast as well. It's Dr. Craig's teaching class, and you will get a real education, as well as get some amazing questions answered when you go to the Defenders podcast here at Reasonable Faith. And speaking of questions and answers, the question of the week is available as well. In fact, you can get that sent to your email. Get details when you go to reasonablefaith.org. That's reasonablefaith.org. And so many of you have expressed interest in partnering with us as we expand Reasonable Faith all over the world. It would be such a blessing if you do so. Just go to the front page of reasonablefaith.org and click the donate button, and we would love to hear from you. I'm Kevin Harris. We'll see you next time on Reasonable Faith with Dr. William Lane Craig.